So what's the difference between history and legend? What makes something historical and what makes something legend? Yeah.
Isn't that history has evidence of some sort in a legend?
Okay, so history has, let's write this down. History has evidence that it occurred. Give me some examples of evidence.
The first president of the United States. We only know he existed because of recorded history.
Okay, so president of the United States, the first president,
right?
So what do we know about him?
His name is George Washington.
Yes, we know his name is George Washington.
Is that
did he exist?
Yeah.
You sure?
I don't know. That's what it says history.
So
yeah,
it seems to be there is recorded information about his existence, okay, as opposed to legend.
And just like stories about evidence.
Stories with no evidence. Uh-huh. For example, well, let's use George Washington again, since you brought him up. Wasn't George Washington as a child told to... Right. He was accused of cutting down a cherry tree. Right? No. That was George Washington. And what did he say? He said, I cannot tell a lie. It was not I. Right? He denied it. Would you put that story into the history or into the legend? You put that into the legend. So here we have George Washington as existing and being president. But over here, we're putting the whole cherry tree example as being legend. Let me ask you a question. Did this occur, this cherry tree? Eliana, did this occur?
I don't know.
Could it be? So the answer is maybe yes, maybe no. There seems to be no direct evidence of it. You wanted to say something else? You had your hand up?
Oh, I was going to say the cherry tree.
Cherry tree you're going to say. Very good. Deanna?
I feel like the difference is that they make legends to like help inspire people and motivate people, like the ones back home or whatever, legends of how heroic people, heroic soldiers.
Where's back home?
Panama.
In Panama? You have legends in Panama?
Yeah, there's many.
Like what?
Like the Kunayala.
The Kunayala? What is that? Sounds like this. No, this is good. I like this. What is that?
Kunayala.
I like to learn things.
It's like an Indian.
Yeah.
Different types of Indians.
Yeah.
So there's like, yeah, she fell asleep in a mountain and she cried all over it and that became the mountain. So you shouldn't treat that way a woman. So like, legends.
What second? What's that story? Wow. I came out of Panama. I'm surprised. I don't know about you. Wow.
Yeah, I know.
I see. So she cried all night and they.
And the mountain got the shape of
a teardrop.
Of her crying.
It's
a legend.
It's a legend.
That's not true. They use
right.
That to explain the mountains, but yes. They use those legends to
uh-huh.
explain things and also to teach.
Okay.
Them.
Okay.
In history, it's like harsh, so you get to learn from it, but you can't like put a
okay.
twist on it.
Okay. So legend is, well, you actually give me two stories. One is a possible story of George Washington. You're giving me a legend which is more like mythology, right? It's more mythological, which has some kind of lesson we can learn from it. In this case, treat women well, okay? Cherry tree, idea of honesty, but that could have actually happened. We're not so sure, okay? Yeah? Yes?
I mean, sometimes, like, legends are associated with places or, like, some cultural groups. Unlike history, it was just, you know, like, history.
It just happened.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah?
Can't legends just be based out of history as well?
Such as?
I mean, I know that Washington thing, like, it's just there might have happened, but Paul Revere actually did ride part of the way, and while he didn't say the British are coming, because they were all British, so it was a historical fact.
Well, he could have been saying the British are coming from England. That would differentiated the whole story, yeah.
He actually...
And actually, for Purim, I dressed up as a redcoat, actually. And my thing was the British coming back again, you see. Sorry, carry on, yes. Sorry. Paul Revere, yes. Paul Revere,
okay, Paul
yeah, right.
It
did occur.
It happened in the way way.
Right, the way it was actually demonstrated. Very, very. That's very interesting. So there was a guy called Paul Revere. That's accepted. You're saying Paul Revere's existence is historical fact.
And so is the event, but the way the event unfolded.
That he's riding all night and there was a light and all the other stuff that went with it, that just could have been fabricated to
enhance
the story, make it more palatable, better for kids. More relatable, yeah, that kind of stuff, right? I'm sure most cultures have these kind of like legendary facts as well. Okay. How do we know if history, once again, is really historical? So we need evidence. And one is recorded information, okay? But you have recorded information of legends as well. I mean, there we have a recorder. Could be in some books, it's written down about the tree, you know? What makes history, history. What makes it fact? What makes it that we accept it actually happened? Yeah. People saw it, okay. But I haven't met any of those people. How many people do you need for that? What? Two is enough? That's good, it's good, it's thinking. No, I'm thinking. No, we're thinking out loud. Two is better than one? Why? Could two people make something up?
Yes.
How about four people?
Yes, but the more it's going to be harder.
How about 50 people?
50 people's a lot.
100 people? 1,000 people? 50,000 people? That's better?
Yeah.
It's better than one. Why?
Because it's harder to coordinate your if you make something up with many people.
So basically we have this kind of like corroboration within the actual field itself. These people... that eventually the truth will kind of get out. It's like exponential. Okay, yeah.
But also, if you have if you had four people all from different places, like if you had four people, I know that the United States wasn't this big when George Washington, when he was president. Like if you had.
Well, there's many people.
What?
There weren't this many people.
Right, but if you had like one person from like each like corner of the United States, then like I would say.
You would have what?
As evidence.
So you're saying maybe distance helps as well?
Because like those people won't talk to each other, but they all acknowledge that he's the president.
Okay, but four people get together and make up a story.
Right, but if they're from different places, then they don't know each other.
Uh-huh. Okay, that's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah?
Can I incorporate something?
I'm going to come back to that.
Can I incorporate something about another religion? Yeah,
sure you can.
I think it's just two people because like the Christian religion... started with two people and then they start adding more and more things. So you just need two people to start at, like, say this thing happened in the history and they did it. Like, a religion got based off that.
So, Deanna, we're going to come back to that as well, yeah?
I have two questions. One, the more people you have witnessing something, the easier it is to look past bias and get to the core of what happened. Like, if someone got shot and 50 people saw it, you might say he got shot for different reasons, but the end consensus would be someone's like dead because there was a shooting. On the other hand, what two people started the Christian religion? Like, I was just confused by that.
Yeah. Like when I was learning and in history class, they're saying like the Christian religion, it didn't start with many people. Few people started, and from there started going on. Two or three people started.
Our point is, it started as a small Jesus cult. It doesn't start as it is today, and then after Jesus died. We have various events and people coming together and creating the religion itself. But it's a little bit different because there's more than one person over there. How about Islam? How did Islam start?
Muhammad.
Where was he?
He was talking to a prophet.
Right, he was behind the mountain talking to the prophet Gabriel. Angel Gabriel. Actually, the angel, not the prophet. Angel Gabriel, who came to him and said that he's the chosen one. Who was he with?
No one.
Well, he's actually with his donkey. Who was the first person he converted? His wife, whose name was Fatima, I believe. And he went home, and she became his first follower. Since the beginning of time, let's move into the religion aspect of this, because that's where I'm going to go, obviously. If we look at pretty much all religions, sects and cults, because they all started as that, they always seem to start the same way. Every single one. And it's quite interesting. And there's been, experts say, 25,000 sects, cults, and religions. If you want to make a lot of money, by the way, you want to start your own religion. I keep thinking about it. Start my own religion. I once had students who say I should start the Rabbi Haji Baba religion, just to, you know, have a revelation. 1 second, here it's coming. No. So maybe, you know, they all seem to start, which is what? Which is one person, usually a male, by the way, if not always a male, is by himself, or with one other person, right? I think Mormonism started with one other person, and they are somewhere far away in a deserted place, and they hear God speak to them and tell them they are the new chosen prophet. Okay. That's pretty much how it always seems to begin, every single one. They don't claim any different to that. Christianity is a little bit tricky, there's more people involved, for sure, but still it comes from a small cult group, which is how it started, a small sect, and it grows from that point, and then changes. What's the Jewish claim to the truth?
That everybody...
So it's a very interesting claim. Let's just look at the claim. Whether it happened or not, we'll leave it aside. It did, but let's leave that aside. Just look at the claim itself. What is the claim of Judaism, which is going to be different, which is why I've mentioned in previous class that Judaism is not a religion. The claim of Judaism, which no one else has ever made, and this is found in the Torah itself, is that there were 600, the Torah itself says 600,000 males between the age of 20 and 60, add their wives and children, we end up with a number 2.5 to 3 million people were at a place called Mount Sinai. That's not the hospital on the Upper East Side, by the way. That is Mount Sinai in the Sinai Desert, outside of Israel. We'll do another whole discussion on why the Torah was given outside of Israel, which is a very interesting thing. Who would have thought Torah was given in Israel? We'll leave that aside. We'll leave that aside for now. And God spoke and gave the Torah to the entire Jewish people. Now, that's an interesting thing for a couple of reasons. First of all, well, a few reasons. First of all, no one else even claims that. No one else even claims such a thing. Why don't they claim that? Why doesn't Christianity or Islam, these are rhetorical questions for now, why doesn't Christianity or Islam claim that, or the Baha'i faith, or Hinduism, or Sikhism? They always start with one person. Guru Nanak is by himself. Always one person. Why can't they just claim there were thousands and thousands and thousands of people who heard God speak to me? I mean, if I told you last night I was in Madison Square Garden, and what happens? A voice came out of the heavens and pointed at me and said, Rabbi Hachioff, you are the chosen one. You shall be a prophet for the people. And you will start your new religion. The Rabbi Hachioff needs to pay for his children's yeshiva tuition. And let us give checks. And let us fund this young man. Did that happen? Did that happen, Eliana?
No.
You're convinced about that? Is that legend or is that fact? Eliana, I want you to know the answer to this question, okay? Don't be shy. It's okay to have an opinion. We live in a world. I was in Madison Square Garden last night. There were 50,000 people present. God spoke to me in front of all those people and said, you're the chosen one. Did that happen? Did that not happen?
Speak to you out loud?
Out loud, yes.
So
the answer is no. Why? How do you know that? You weren't there. It would have been on the news. It would have been on the news, right? These aren't trick questions. It would have been on the news. You would have been heard about it. What would have happened? It would have been all over the news. Hey, Rabbi Lawrence Hachioff is a new Messiah. He started a new religion, and I wouldn't be here right now. I'd be calling you from my yacht. You know what I'm saying? With my minions, right? It would have been like a whole big production. The New York Post, New York Times would have been talking about it, and New York Times back page. But I would have been somewhere in it. It would have been like a whole big production. So therefore, you can say emphatically that last night that did not happen. And it's okay to have opinions. Don't be shy. Like when in the world no one gives opinions. Didn't happen. Of course it didn't happen. But if I told you, Gabriella Ben Huta, that last night I was in bed, asleep, and my wife was there, and a voice came to me and spoke to me, and my wife was still asleep, and told me that Rabbi Hachioff, you are the chosen one. And from you will come many, many great prophets. And you will also make a great profit by having this position. And you shall lead the... And I tried waking up my wife, and I heard this voice, and I spoke back. We had a nice conversation, and I'm the chosen one. True or not true? You don't know. It might be true. It might not be true. It could be that I ate too much chillant on Shabbos and now it's affecting my brain, right? It could be that I'm drinking way too much, which I'm not, by the way. It could be that I'm smoking cigarettes that I should. There's possibilities over here, but you can't say it never happened, can you?
How did the other religions start?
Exactly that way. Now, that's a good question, and that's maybe not for this class. What is it? You can talk to Rabbi Langer in sociology, and you can talk to these psychology professors to work out what attracts people to this. Okay. What's very interesting as well, if you look at the main religions out there, here's another very interesting fact. They all seem to verify Judaism and the Torah, more importantly. The Torah is true. The Torah was given by God to the Jewish people. Right, Christianity and Islam and even Hinduism, which actually Hinduism isn't really a religion, it's more of a experience. But even that has got a lot of legends, and a lot of them come from the Torah. Like, open up the Quran, there's a chapter called Musa, Moses, a chapter called Dawid, David, right? They're coming from Ibrahim. It's coming from Christianity as well. That's referred to as the Old Testament. It's not the Old Testament. But why can't they just turn around and say, Judaism, not true nonsense, this is a... There's a reason why. There's an actual reason why. It could be that even the new religions that come all the time, right? The Raelians and all these other cults, they'll say the Torah is true. They don't deny it. These are, as we say in this trade, theological postulates. You know, in math, there's like various postulates, they're givens, you know, like certain things which are absolute and guaranteed, like the straightest, the shortest distance between two points, the straight line that connects it, you know, and you know, those kind of things. And if your mother-in-law comes for Shabbos, she's going to complain. Certain things which are givens, they're absolute givens, they cannot be broken in any way, shape, or form. Theological postulate, according to Islam, God gave the Torah to the Jewish people. According to Christianity, God gave the Torah to the Jewish people. That's billions of people. And that's thousands of years later. And all the other religions that come from them as well, which there's many, many. I mean, Christianity, you think Jews are divided. There's like hundreds, if not thousands, of different varieties of Christianity that are out there. Now, that's interesting. Why is that so interesting? Because it could have been that they turn around and say, Judaism never happened, complete nonsense, let's start a new religion. They didn't do that. What I want to show you today is an argument to say that they couldn't do that. It's impossible. They had to build on the back of it. They have to turn around and say, that was then, and now we're changing it to become a reform movement that's going to look like this. We're changing it because now the other prophet came along and they reject this prophet, but that was true, and now this is true. They don't accept it. They're going to be... Can you hear the difference? Can you see why that's important? If I told you, 100 years ago, in San Francisco, gold trees sprouted all over San Francisco for one day, and there was a big gold rush all over San Francisco 100 years ago. Did that occur? The answer is no. We would have heard about it. Gold trees? No. There was a gold rush, but not gold trees. Yes, there was. But not gold trees coming out of people's... And the answer is... So how do you know you weren't alive then? That's a very good question. And the answer is, how do we... That's exactly the question we're looking at. How do we know that anything from the past actually happened? Do we know that George Washington existed? And we say, yes, we don't even question that. And the answer is because...
He wrote...
Maybe he didn't. Who says he did? What makes it into history? What makes anything to history? And the answer is, there are witnesses to it and it's recorded. As opposed to, if I told you, my grandmother had a gold tree pop up in her backyard, no one saw it, and then it died within one day. And the answer is, maybe it did, maybe it didn't. Can you hear the difference? I'm just trying to distinguish exactly what you're saying. How do we distinguish one from the other? The Jewish claim is that 3 million people heard God speak at Mount Sinai. That is the claim of truth. Everything is going to stem from that point. We don't believe what we believe because of Abraham. Avraham Avinu and Sarah, all the things we discuss up to this point, only take relevance after that fact. Imagine you have a king. Could be a famous analogy. By the way, Jewish analogies always involve kings, right? There's always a king involved there. Or some guy in the woods chopping trees down. There's always some. Imagine you have a king, and the king has two sons. Okay? And the king dies without telling the people which one of the sons are going to take over. So the sons start to battle it out. You know, like today's the election. Right? So everyone's battling out, right, New York mayor. Everyone's battling out who's going to take over. So they start, okay, fighting each other, arguing with each other. There's supporters on both sides, back and forth. Eventually, one of the sons says, the deal is done. I am going to be the next king. Come tonight to the town square, and I shall reveal why. So everyone goes to the town square, and they're there together. And the son says, give me the crown, because last night, my father came to me in a dream and told me that I am the next king. What would the people say? Forget about it. We're not going to buy that. Why not? Because if your father came to anyone a dream to make you the king, it wouldn't be you. It would be all of us. If we all had that dream that you're the chosen one, then we can have a discussion. But for you to stand up and come forward and say that you're the chosen one because of... it's not going to work. Are you with me? Okay. Why doesn't the Pope stand on the balcony today and say, everybody? Well, I used to like doing an Italian accent, but now you have to do a, I don't know, Spanish accent. Everybody. I have something to say. 350 years ago, God revealed himself to 3 million Christians and told us that we are the chosen people and Jesus is our Savior. That would be like an amazing claim to make, wouldn't it? Wouldn't that be a great claim? Imagine that. He goes up and says, you know what, something I haven't told you. We have a tradition that 350 years ago, God spoke to millions of us and told us that Jesus is the Messiah. That's pretty impressive. Why doesn't he do that? That's like a really good claim to make. In other words, there are inferior claims and there are superior claims. We already established that a superior claim is to say that many, many, many people witness something. And in that, from even historically, even if I didn't see it with my own eyes, that's going to make it historical fact, not legend. Now we're saying that he turns around many years later and says, 350 years ago, this event occurred. Hey, you can't prove it didn't happen. What a great claim to make. Why has no pope, no imam, no one ever in any religion in the history of the world ever made that claim, even the claim? Because
they came out of that one.
They can't convince millions of people to say that.
Why not? They can convince many people doing many things. Why that particular claim? What is the problem with that claim? You know, it's nothing crazy because...
Wait.
1 second. Don't but wait. Let's hear the argument, then we'll do the but wait. 1 second. Yes. Well, those people are all dead. Happened 300 years ago.
What?
They would say... Why was it publicized then? And it would have been known, and we would have historical records of this happening. Can you see how it's falsifiable? It's always going to be falsifiable. You can't turn around 20 years later and make the claim. I mean, you can try, but no one's going to buy it. So either it did happen or it didn't happen, or the claim was made at the beginning. But we said even at the time, how can you persuade those people to say that we saw something when they didn't? Now, maybe one or two people you can, but millions of people you cannot. Can you hear the argument? Yes, now you can make a point. But wait.
No, I was just... Sorry, it's the Catholic school and me kicking up.
Good.
In Catholic doctrine, it's already said and stated that Jesus, who would have been God, if we believe that, went and talked to thousands, if not millions of people, and converted them where they sit.
Very good. What you just described to me was one person spoke to thousands of people, and made a statement. That is very different to what I'm saying. It's completely different. You can have one person stand in front of millions of people and say something happened to me. This is not the case of Judaism. Listen to your Catholic difference. The Catholic difference is one person says it happened to me. I'm saying that 3 million people claim it happened to them.
Oh, no, I'm not arguing.
You hear the difference? No, I'm not arguing. But you hear the difference. Can you hear the difference?
Yeah, no, but it's not like one person said it happened to me. People claim not just Jesus, but
so
it's...
So, the three claims of Christianity, the three claims of Christianity are all based upon this idea happening to him. What are they? The virgin birth.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's number one. We have the records, right, which, by the way, is based upon mistranslations from the book of Isaiah, which we'll do another time. Number two, but again, verifiable or not,
yeah.
Virgin birth. It's tricky. Right? But these are one of the three claims of truth. I mean, every religion has a claim of truth. Number two, that Jesus is a direct descendant of King David. But there are many people who are. That's the claim. You have to be, in order to become Mashiach, the Messiah, you have to be a direct descendant of King David.
Isn't all of us descended from David, socially?
No, not everyone's descended from David.
Oh, the different tribes, sorry.
Different tribes. Although most people are from the tribe of Judah, people don't have to be. And the fact that there are two different reports, recorded reports, of how the descendancy comes through, which are different, by the way.
Yeah.
Plus, how can you be a descendant of King David if your father is God and not a human as well? So that's another major challenge there as well. And the resurrection from the grave, which no one actually saw. People saw him before and people saw him afterwards. So those three, interesting, even those three claims are not verifiable because they weren't witnessed by many, 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 many people.
The Jewish religion is.
What?
The Jewish religion is because many people saw it.
Okay. So let's have a look. So that's the claim. Yes, yes, yes.
How do we know, I'm just playing devil's advocate.
You're asking questions.
Anyone can write down that 3 million people saw something. It's just a number. It's
great.
A number.
So our point is, it's not just, that's my point. 3 million is not just a number. What it is a claim of truth. And if it's so easy, why has no one else done it? And the answer is because you can't. It's verifiable. So no one else, in all these other religions, no one's ever made that claim. Just, isn't that interesting? Should we get controversial for a second? Okay. I have a question. Which is a difficult question, but I think it's an important one. Let's change topic completely. Should we do that for a second? Let's change the topic. I have a question for you. And I'm asking this for a reason. Did the Holocaust happen?
Yeah.
How do you know the Holocaust occurred? Survivors. What do they see? They saw 3 million people, 6 million people being killed? They saw a little bit of torture over here. The Nazis weren't very, very good people. But to say millions died from those accounts?
Pictures.
You know, you can take pictures. They can be corrupted. You can have pictures of people being killed in there. You see pictures of bodies being buried. Doesn't mean they were killed. Of course you can. You can't say they were killed in gas chambers. These people died of disease. Hey, Russians died too. Say the Holocaust, 20 million Russians died. To say that they were targeted by the... You can go where? I know, I've been to Poland, and I've been in these camps, and you see, there were different places, hard to know exactly what they were, what these buildings really were at the time, maybe they used this for killing, for disinfecting, written accounts, people can lie in their written accounts.
There's legislation.
What legislation?
Nazi legislation.
That said what? There were bad people in the Nazi party who basically were writing things down. But to say that 6 million were slaughtered in 5-6 years, that's a very, very big claim. The Nazis weren't good people. We know they weren't. We killed them. We got rid of them. They're gone. But to say they gassed people, are records of what? People have ever seen records being plagiarized and changed? You know what happens? Maybe people came along after the Holocaust, wrote up those records in order to get sympathy so that Israel could set up a state. Documents saying what? Make up documents.
You can't make up
that was
documents.
All manufacturing.
But then there was a greater number of Jews before the Holocaust. So how do you explain that?
You know what? Many of them died from natural causes. And it's not so... Well, honestly, I think 6 million is a big exaggeration. Maybe there were 3 million. And 1 million died, you know. And they got involved in various... they got diseases, for example. And the rest went... Look how many Jews there are today. It could be they ended up going to Israel. You know, it's not so easy to know the records during wars. Yeah?
What about in the Nuremberg trials? Didn't some of the Nazis who were being accused just admit to what they did?
Yeah, they admitted. And I would say the number, maybe 100,000 were killed, but 6 million? You know, we got a problem. What I'm claiming, obviously, is not true. Obviously. But there are many people. Vast amount of people, heads of governments, to this day, 60 years later, who deny the Holocaust ever happened. That's 60 years after the event. Isn't that crazy? 60 years! It's like yesterday, that's in our parents' or grandparents' lifetime, and they are denying this ever occurred. Wild, right? And we're trying so hard, and there's so many museums, and there's so many documents, there's so many movies and photographs and eyewitness testimonies with the Shoah Foundation, and people are trying to move it over here rather than over here. crazy. I have an idea. I have an idea. You ready? I want to think about this. Let's start a society. And we're going to call the society the Holocaust Memorial Society. Or for short, HMS. And what we're going to do is this. We're going to find every Holocaust survivor, and we're going to start a new way of living for them and their children and their children's children. And if you are a descendant or yourself are a survivor, you become a member of this society, and you're going to wear a yellow star. On your arm. And people say, hey, why is a yellow star on your arm? And you're like, I'll tell you why. Because my grandmother, she was in Bergen-Belsen. And my other grandfather, he managed to survive Majdanek somehow. And we have a tradition that goes down generations that we always wear a yellow star. We always do that. Not only that. It's okay. Not only that. Anyone who's a member of the HMS has to gather together. Once a week. Sound good? And they're going to get together for meetings of the HMS, Holocaust Memorial Society. And they're going to read a document. This document was a handwritten document written by 50 survivors of their experiences during the Holocaust. And it's the same document all over the world. If you're a survivor in Panama, you're a survivor in Brazil, you're in America, you're in France, you're in Russia, everyone's reading exactly the same document. Okay? And it's read together. Not only that, once a year, you're going to get together with your family for a week. And you're going to have the Holocaust Memorial Society week. No matter where you are, families together, even if the original ancestor who was in the Holocaust died, doesn't make a difference. You're going to get together. And you're going to eat hard bread. Because that's what they had during the Holocaust, yeah? And you're going to be like, this hard bread, this is the bread of affliction that my grandfather ate in Majdanek. And you're going to take potato peels, because that's what they used to eat, right? Not really food. You're going to take potato peels. And you're going to dip those potato peels in salt water and take a bite. And say, this is what my great-great-great-grandmother ate. And my parents did this, and my grandparents, and my great-grandparents. And we're all going to eat this hard bread and this potato peel to remember the terrible things that happened. People say, wow, what are you doing, such a strange thing, eating hard, crusty bread? And eating the potato pills, you'd be like, I'll tell you why, because my great-great-grandmother, and we've always done this every generation after each other. You're also going to have the number tattooed onto your arm. Everyone has to do it. Gabriele, your great-grandmother was in somewhere, what was her number? You have the same number, your father has the same number, your mother's the same number, and all the way back, everyone has the same number on their arms. For tens, if not hundreds of generations, we're all going to have it. Let's say one of your friends comes to you and says, wow, this whole gathering together, reading the scroll, eating the hard bread, having the tattoo, wearing the yellow star. Wow, that's amazing. Can I join your group? So what? I want to join the Holocaust Memorial Society. I'm like, why would you want to do that? Like, well, it's so beautiful, these lovely traditions that have been passed down for so many generations. What would you say? Why would you want to? You don't need to. You don't need to. You say, I'm not as good as you? Like, no, you know, it's not about being good or not good. This is about what happened to my family to perpetuate and to keep the historical evidence of that event going down through the generations. That's what we're trying to do over here. But I want to join you. Are you sure? Yes. I mean, are you like really 1,000% sure? Yes. Okay. Then you're going to have to promise you're going to wear the yellow star, gather together every single week. Once a week, you're going to have to eat the hard bread, potato peels, you're going to get the tattoo of some Holocaust survivor, put onto your arm. And you know, by the way, how when they left after the Holocaust, they couldn't just go home. They lived in these tents, these DP camps, displaced person camps, for a long time. Once a year, for a week, you're going to live in a tent. You're going to live in a tent. Imagine that. But it's cold outside. Well, if it's really cold, you go inside. But if the weather's okay, you can live in that tent. Why? Because my father did it, and my grandfather, and my mother, and my grandmother, and every single generation. We are living witnesses. We've taken that event from the past, and we keep it perpetuated, and we keep it going. I'm hoping you're seeing the connection over here, right? We don't have a yellow star. Right? We wear various clothing to represent. We gather together once a week. We read a document that is unchanged for every single generation. We have Pesach. We have Brit Milah. We have Sukkot. Now, these are not the only reasons for these mitzvot. That's for sure. But according to tradition, we have definitely created a living witness to that original event that happened to all of these different people. By the way, they did try to start up such a society. Interesting enough, for the Holocaust. Not with all this stuff, all this paranoia, but they got together, made a scroll, and they started the whole thing, and they took together, I think, 10,000 people to the Kotel, and they made the document, and they read it out in different languages, in Hebrew, and in Russian, and in French, and in English. And it was wonderful, but they couldn't pass on to the next generation. It was very hard to create this. Not this part. They didn't try to make them wear yellow stars and get tattoos. Although I have seen people doing that, by the way. But they found it very difficult to pass it on. The next generation is the toughest one. Because once you go to a new society, a new culture, to keep it going, it just gets forgotten. It evaporates. Kids don't want to be part of it. They want a reason for it. Incredibly, we as a people have been going 3,325 years, and we're still saying the same thing.
So Christians have been going 1,000 years.
Absolutely. But their claim is not verifiable. In other words, it's not just time that does it. It's the claim. And Christianity had to turn around and say the Torah was true. They couldn't deny it. But it would be such a better way to do it. Let them do it now. You can't do that. You've got to say, it's the Old Testament, that's true, and now it's become this. These are just ideas. These are not my ideas, by the way. I'm just sharing with you. Let's have a look at some of the Jewish sources describing what we've looked at today. We're on page 14. Christianity, Islam, Sikhism, by faith, all affirm Judaism's claim that God, through Moshe, Moses, gave the Torah to the Jewish people. And by the way, I say that once again, not an individual. I know in the movie, Charlton Heston, this is way before your time, right? But still, this movie is up on the mountain. He's by himself, right? Or the Prince of Egypt? No, that I saw that one. And he's up on the mountain. He's by himself, and God speaks to him. That's not the claim. The Torah says in a number of places, as we'll see, that God spoke to the entire Jewish people. This is a postulate upon which they all agree. That at one point in history, Jewry possessed God's plan. For them all, the Torah is a divine document. The only discourse where the Moses revelation was superseded by later prophets. Did Jesus come and supersede it? Did Muhammad come and supersede it? Right? Did Guru Nanak come and supersede it? Did all these other claims come forward? The Raelian God, all the other people, did they come and supersede it? Says the Kuzari.
Wait, where are you?
Page 14.
Yeah, where are you?
At the top. Yeah. Now we're on note 1. What is the faith of the Jewish people? Not the stories of Avraham Avinu. Those have great relevance to us because they're recorded in the Torah itself. But that's not our claim of the truth. And that's one reason we're going to see the Torah was not given to Avraham Avinu, because he would have been one person and one family. It's got to be quality and quantity. That's what we need for this. It's a qualitative and quantitative. It can't just be it happened to a few. Oh, you didn't hear about this whole Torah thing because it happened to a small tribe in the middle of Africa. You weren't happy. Oh, it happened to my family. Your family weren't there. It doesn't say that. It says all the Jewish people were there at the time. And every descendant we have today is a great, 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 great descendants of those original people. It didn't just happen to my mishpacha. Oh, say my family, if we were there, you missed that event. That's not the claim. Just the claim itself. Says the Kuzari, the faith of the Jewish people is based on eyewitness testimony and requires neither proof nor demonstration. It's like it's given. It's a given. Interestingly, and this is another discussion not for now, it's only in the past 150 years that people are starting to say this did not happen. There are individuals that say it, obviously. And there are sects within the Jewish faith in the past 100 years, which historically speaking is like yesterday, over thousands of years, who claim this for the first time. Why they want to make such a claim after thousands of years, the entire Jewish people accepting it, is a discussion. Is a discussion. We can have that discussion at some later point. Why they want to make such a claim that God didn't give the Torah to the Jewish people, it was made by humans. Right? There are large sects and denominations that do claim that. Okay? But historically speaking, that's very, very recent. Yes.
What's the point of claiming that? Like, if you're part of a different sect, why would you want to claim that?
That's the discussion. Why would they want to even claim that? Why do they want to go into? Why do they want to say the Torah is not God-given? Well, it could be
why do they even care about the Torah?
You see, well, they do care about the Torah. Are you talking about other religions or other?
Yeah, like these other sects that are trying to say.
In Judaism or outside Judaism?
Outside. Oh,
I
thought you were saying.
I'm talking about inside Judaism. Talking about. Yeah, inside Judaism. They want to make that claim. And there are various individuals who may have the same desire, that it's just a man-made document and we don't have to follow it. Because once you say it's just a man-made document, so we have men today are very smart, great women today are very smart, we'll just rewrite it, copy, edit it, it's just nice stories and that's it. You know? Let's have a look at this. In his opening marks to Pharaoh, Moses told him, the God of the Hebrews sent me to you, referring to the God of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Moshe uses this description in note 2, says the Kuzari. Moshe uses this description of God because the patriarchs were well known to the nations of the world. They acknowledged that the divine spirit clung to the patriarchs and they were guided by God. And he performed miracles for them. Moshe did not say to Pharaoh, the God of heaven and earth sent me, or my creator and your creator sent me, for Pharaoh would have denied creation. He didn't just make some blanket, he put people and involved people. God also revealed himself to the Jewish people at Har Sinai in the same manner. Saying, I'm the Lord your God who has taken you out of Egypt. He did not introduce himself and say, I'm the Lord your God who created the world and yourselves. It was out of Egypt, so it became a historical fact. Meaning that the revelation of Har Sinai was also an indisputable truth which they personally witnessed and experienced. You went through it. You know. Your eyes saw. You were there. How do you pass it on to your kids? That's another question. But you have an actual visual as a totality of the nation that this actually occurred. Okay? And the different examples I gave, and there's some more here as well, of various things. The cherry tree is over here. George Washington. Yeah. All written down here as well. And that's why we observe the mitzvot. That's not the only reason. And I even brought down the analogy of the Holocaust. Turn to page 17. We'll come back to that Ramban a little bit later. Of how we can have various people who make analogies. Sorry. We can have various people who deny the Holocaust ever occurred and say it was mere legend. And we see here, I mean, I'm just giving you a list over here of various Holocaust deniers. These aren't just some crazy people in the middle of nowhere. Right? We have Ahmadinejad, head of state. That's a big thing. We have various professors of universities, even here in America. Right? Arthur Butts, professor of engineering, Northwestern University. We have professors from the Sorbonne. Now, these people, thank God, are pushed to the side, but they even make that original claim. Yeah.
So what's the answer about why other religions needed to use the Jewish religion in their religion?
Because they couldn't deny it ever occurred. You can't turn around and say that event never happened. I mean, they could have, but it wouldn't have been bought. So they have to build on the back of it. They have to turn around and say that the Torah is given to the Jewish people. That's the question. The question is, why didn't they? Why didn't they just remove it? Yes, Eliana.
Why do people... I mean, like, I understand why Ahmadinejad tries to deny the Holocaust, but, like, other people who don't really have, like, that much power.
That's a good question. It could be that they really believe it, because there's other people who talk about it. It could be that the consequence of it actually happening, it could be pure anti-Semitism.
But, like, what's the point, though? Wouldn't they want that if they're anti-Semitic? Wouldn't they want us to have...
I know, it's almost ironic, right? They want us to go away and to leave, and right. then...
Wouldn't they want to say, like, oh, look what happened, like, we can do it again or something? That doesn't make any sense.
A lot of it, I believe, is connected to anti-Israel stances that they hold. That the whole legitimacy of Israel is based upon the sympathy from the whole Holocaust. Could be related to that. Could be that the Jewish people don't deserve any special preference. They never went through this. Or just good old plain anti-Semitism. And we're going to discuss anti-Semitism as well. We're going to do some classes on that as well. From the Torah perspective. Yeah.
Why would Christians say that, like, that the Jewish people had, like, that it happened and everything if it contradicts, like, a lot of things in their doctrine?
Because in their doctrine, it will say that was the truth, and now Jesus came and revealed a new truth to us, and we're no longer obligated in the various commandments.
But even not the commandments, I'm saying it contradicts, like, a lot of things in the Christian
Bible. There are many. You're right. There are many inconsistencies. They will claim those inconsistencies are actually consistent, and will mistranslate. Right? They will mistranslate verses from Isaiah, for example, the virgin birth, which is one of the three claims of the truth of Christianity. That means the Hebrew word used, which they're claiming describes the birth of Jesus, is an alma. Actually, it's not discussing him at all, it's discussing someone else completely. An alma means a young girl, right? They say that means a virgin. That's the Hebrew word alma. A virgin is a betula. So they mistranslate the word alma, although everywhere else it exists, always refers to a young woman, who may or may not be a virgin. Right, as a virgin, when the Hebrew word is a betula. That's called a mistranslation in order to make a point. There are many, many other such mistranslations that they use in order to bring forward a thesis or an idea. I mean, what's weird is why they just don't get rid of the Holy Testament. It never occurred, and here's Jesus. But they can't.
Right,
that's
right.
The point.
Because then you say it has no legitimacy.
Then
right?
They lose all legitimacy, yeah.
It's really hard to create legitimacy without doing.
Yeah.
But, like, God knew a lot of religions were going to happen.
Oh, very much so. We're going to see inside the Torah itself, many times it makes references to false prophets that will come. And we're told specifically not to listen to them if they say, now, if you have a prophet who can prophesy amazing things, and they all come true, but they remove one mitzvah from the Torah, you put them to death. That's an obligation. You can't even change one letter in the Torah. It's a big thing. Yeah.
So I don't get it. Like, Christianity believes in, like, the Old Testament, but if something like that is, like, in the Torah, then how are they...
Because they say those events occurred, and Jesus came and gave us new instructions. He's the new prophet. That is what they will claim.
Don't rabbis do that?
For example? Like what?
Like, when... You know, there's Torah Be'al-Peh and Torah written. The Torah Be'al-Peh is, like, everything that's said, they're writing down, a lot of them are customs,
right.
And it's not just, like... Well, now you don't have to do this
because of the... Very good. So what the Oral... Very good. So we're going to talk about... We're going to do classes on what the Oral Torah is and what the Written Torah is. We're going to get there. The Oral Torah doesn't come to contradict the Written Torah. What it says in the Torah is a given. We may not be able to perform those mitzvot anymore. For example, half the mitzvot or many of the mitzvot are involved in stuff in the temple. Right? The Korbanot, for example. That we just can't do anymore. They're not changing it.
I mean, sometimes my wives, like, somebody asks me this question, like, in advance, or sometimes, like, with the customs... And so they're like, a rabbi said, now you can't do this. And then everybody starts doing it. A rabbi said that, but it wasn't in the Torah.
Hey, I have to give me an example. I'm sorry, I can't. It's hard to say.
I can ask the person who asked me the question. I'll ask you.
Do that. You can bring it to class as well.
She's in Panama. I'm a little bit too
far. Don't bring it to class then if she's in Panama. Oh, we're short of time. You know, just finish up with one last piece from the Torah itself with the Rashi, page 16. And we'll finish with this. It says in Devarim, chapter 29, verse 30 to 14, V'lo etchem levatchem eni koretz sabrit. It's not just me with you alone, speaking to the entire Jewish people, that I'm making this brit, hazot, ve'ta'il hazot, and this oath, ha'ala, ki et asher yeshnu po imanu imariyom, lefnei Hashem Elokeinu ve'et asher enenu po imanu yom. I'll make it with you, we're here, and those who are not here, says Rashi, those who are not with us, refers to forging a covenant for future generations. It was created for future generations as well, not just for them at that time. Okay? Everything that occurred was for the entire Jewish people at that time, and for generations afterwards. And that's why it says many times in the Torah, these mitzvot, I think at least 37 of the mitzvot, refer to le'olam. And this will be a mitzvah forever. How long is forever? Well, for a long time. For a long, long time. Forever. Not just till we die, forever. To come along and change us afterwards is a very, very big and challenging thing. Yes, Gabriela Ben Huta. Great, great question. How we manage to keep going. That will be our discussion next class when we discuss the idea of the chosen people and their particular role in Jewish history. That was a tough class today. We did a lot. My brain hurts. But it was good. Have a great, successful day. We'll pick this up, God willing, tomorrow morning.